This is Dateline Washington on the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is Jim Manzi, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. For the June 8th edition of National Review, he ran the numbers on the proposed Waxman-Markey cap-and-trade system, otherwise known as the global warming legislation or energy reform, and he says that it's not a good deal for the American economy or the American taxpayer. And Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
One of the things you pointed out is that over time, basically the rest of the 21st century, there's not even a contention in this legislation that the current energy consumption that we're undergoing is really going to have a negative impact on the economy. And even next century, it's going to be pretty minor, correct?
That's right. The United Nations IPCC, which is the large global body of scientists who are tasked with looking at this, and the group that won the Nobel Prize, has made the estimate that under a reasonable set of assumptions for world population and economic growth, we should have something like 3 degrees centigrade warming over the next century or so. By the time we get to 4 degrees warming, which should therefore be sometime in the 22nd century, their estimate is that's going to cause costs of about 3% of global economic output. So it's not disaster, but it's a real amount of money. Most modeling by professional modelers, such as the Yale Modeling Group, estimates that the United States, because of its geographical location and mix of economic activities, will actually likely have no net economic costs from global warming through the end of this century, and only in the next century will we start to experience any direct costs.
What you point out later in the piece, Jim, is that the cost would be about 10 times any proposed economic benefits here. What kind of costs are we looking at in reality if this goes forward?
You know, don't listen to me or necessarily people agree with me. Listen to what the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, says. Their estimate is that the direct costs of the Waxman-Markey bill, if we assume perfect implementation, which is not going to happen, would be about 0.8% or a little under 1% of total U.S. economic consumption by the year 2050. So we would have about 1% less money than we otherwise would by the year 2050, and those costs will presumably keep rising, actually, as we go into 2100 and beyond. That's a small percentage, but 1% of the U.S. economy is a lot of money. The problem is, when you then compare that cost to the benefits we would get, the total temperature reduction we could expect to achieve if we fully implement Waxman-Markey is about a 0.1 degree reduction in global temperatures versus what they otherwise would be by 2100. And so if you basically take 4 degrees centigrade warming is worth about 3% of GDP, 0.1 over 4 or 1/40th of 3% is about 0.08%. So in other words, to compare the numbers quickly, the costs of this are about 0.8% of GDP or more. The benefits are about 0.08% or 1/10 of that. So the problem is, from the perspective of a U.S. taxpayer, every dollar we spend or we give up under Waxman-Markey, we get a dime back.
We're talking with Jim Manzi of the Manhattan Institute. His article for the June 8th edition of National Review is Dunce Cap and Trade. And Jim, some may be listening to this and saying, well, the point of cap and trade is not necessarily a huge economic boon. It's to save the planet. We're doing too much damage to the planet through air and pollution and so forth. And this is really an environmental process as much as it is an energy reform project. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think it's true that not everything that matters in life can be measured by money. That said, I don't think that the view that the total effect on the world's economy over the next more than 100 years is a 3% reduction in consumption comports at all with the rhetoric that we're going to see cities flooded, we're going to see the Great Plains turn into deserts, and so on. That really is rhetoric. If you look at the real reports, and I don't mean produced by, you know, ideologues, I mean produced by the EPA, by the United States government, by the UN IPCC, global warming is a real effect, but it is not the cataclysm. It's not projected to be the cataclysm that people are talking about. So at a certain point, if voters decide they want to spend about $80 billion a year, which is what Waxman-Markey will cost us, even in the front years, it'll get to be more later on, want to spend $80 billion a year for that benefit, that's their choice. I don't think if presented with the full facts, they will.
Another point you make in this piece, Jim, is that while many people are concerned about the amount of carbon being emitted into the atmosphere, the consumption of carbon is, in your view, equal to progress and modernization, and that if you really want to go to the places that don't have much of a so-called carbon footprint, you're pretty much ending up in the third world.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that over a very long period of time, economies are becoming less and less carbon dependent. That's been happening for the last almost century and will almost certainly continue. But the fact is, for people alive on the planet right now, to say that we want to reduce carbon dioxide emissions in practice means we want to consume less energy. If we consume less energy as a practical matter, we'll have less economic growth. And that doesn't mean just, you know, less Cheetos and Big Gulps. It means hospitals that won't get built. It means roads that won't get built, et cetera, all the things that we want that come from economic progress. So if we're concerned about the fate of people in the world, we can't just, I don't believe it's wise to focus on this one issue, which is what will happen to economic their consumption of goods 100 years from now, and ignore the fact that the things we would do to try and address that problem have real-life costs today that are really going to matter to people.
Jim, last 30 seconds here. What specifics have been offered by supporters of this legislation for the either the environmental or economic benefits that it actually would accomplish?
Well, for anyone who's skeptical listening to what I'm saying, the most compelling argument, I think, that would lead you to believe that what I'm saying is right is, to my knowledge, no sponsors or advocates of this bill have presented a cost-benefit analysis. The EPA hasn't, the CBO hasn't, those who are advocating it, the major responsible environmental organizations, no one has produced this, which ought to be a good indication that it's pretty clear that it has a very, very bad payout for American citizens.
Jim, unfortunately, we need to run. Thank you so much for your time today. Very interesting stuff.
Thank you very much.
Jim Manzi is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. His article, Dunce Cap and Trade, appears in the June 8th edition of National Review. This is Dateline Washington.